supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
Welcome to Voices in the Family. I'm Mike and Scott, in for Dan Gottlieb today. The music you're hearing is a chamber orchestra piece by Richard Wagner called Siegfried Idyll. He wrote it as a present to his wife Cosima after the birth of their son Siegfried. And we thought it would be a fitting way to start today's show, which is all about love. Valentine's Day celebrates romantic love. It's enjoyed by couples and despised by many singles, since it is a very in-your-face kind of holiday. On today's show, we're taking a broader look at love, the many different ways to express it, to receive it, and how we can fully engage with those around us and our communities. Joining us here in the studio is Dr. Stephen Post. He's a professor in the Department of Preventive Medicine at Stony Brook University Medical Center, and his new book is called The Hidden Gifts of Helping. Thank you, Stephen, for being here today.
Mike, it's a delight.
Thank you. And later on in the show, we have another guest, Dr. Renee Bradley. She is the research director for the Relationship Research Institute in Seattle, and we look forward to talking to Renee. Stephen Post, you've been researching love for many, many years. How did you get interested in this topic in the first place?
You know, love is the most fundamental dynamic in our lives. And when I was a young boy, about 15 years old, that just was the thing that was obvious to me in my relationships, and I had a wonderful mentor in high school who studied love, who did research on love, who did philosophy of love, and it's always important to have those kinds of people in your lives to get you started with something.
And what continues to draw you to it?
Well, you know, it's just the most powerful thing in our lives. When you look back even on individuals in airplanes on 9/11, what were they doing in their last moments? They were on their cell phones, Mike, and they were calling the people in their lives they loved the most, and they were telling them things will be okay. And, you know, that, I think, to me is always symbolically the testimony that when push comes to shove, the basic important element of our lives is love.
And of course, you know, on Valentine's Day, we think a lot about romantic mm-hmm. love. So what are your thoughts on the day as it is, on all the candy, the roses, the red hearts everywhere?
I'm all for it. You know, I love Valentine's Day. It puts our minds in the right place. We need to celebrate all of that kind of infatuation and attraction and so forth. The only thing I like to remember, though, is that most romantic relationships, if you look at the science, last about 18 months. That's on average. But if you add other ingredients to them, kindness, cherishing, friendship, I like to say sometimes, I've been married for 29 years, love for no reason. You know, it's not always a simple matter. But just, you know, you're gonna love a person, you're going to give love and not just receive it. I think that's the thing that makes romantic love last, and all the studies that we see point that out.
And we want to talk to you also about love, all of you out there celebrating love today. Our number to call in is 1-888-477-9499. Again, that's 1-888-477-9499. We are on some level talking about romantic love, but then we're also really talking about love as a broader concept, how it affects our communities, and how we can find and give love in all different ways. Again, that number is 1-888-477-9499. And Stephen, I do want to talk to you about your book, The Hidden Gifts of Helping, is really about love as a big concept, love for our fellow man, for others. Talk about that.
You know, we don't really want to lay definitions on the world, but simply stated, I think when the happiness and the security of another person means as much or more to me as my own happiness and security, I can say I love that person. And that could be me as a dad looking at my two kids. You have two kids as well. It could be a close friendship where the well-being of that friend just means so much. I want to be there. It's unconditional. It's not calculating. It's not tit for tat. You know, it's just there because I have so much concern for that person. Some people love all humanity. I've had the opportunity over the years to meet some amazing people. Cicely Saunders, who started the whole hospice movement, loved, she had a phenomenal love for people who were at the end of their lives. And she said she founded St. Christopher's Hospice, the first hospice in the world. She said, you know, I still go in, I'm 83 years old, I go in every morning, and I sit on the end of beds and I just listen attentively to people who are dying, because that makes them feel that their lives are significant. And whenever you listen in an undistracted way to other people, they feel loved. You ever notice that? You know? And there's so many people around the world who have this incredible gift of deeply loving folks who are particularly needful. So it goes beyond just the nearest and the dearest, but that's important too, you know. Sometimes we need to balance in our lives those kinds of near and dear relationships, our spouses, our kids, our parents, our friends, but we need to think about the neediest as well.
You talk in your book about the way in which you start your day, and you think about how you can be a more loving person each and every day. Talk about a bit how that routine unfolds for you.
You know, it's just like any athlete tells you that they kind of go through a dress rehearsal of what they're going to do in a sports event. So I do a lot of visualization in the morning. I usually get up pretty early. I'm pretty much a 5 a.m. riser. And I always spend a half an hour and sometimes an hour. I know my schedule and I'm aware of the people I'll encounter, and some of them have different kinds of needs. Some of them need a real good listening ear. Some of them need what I call carefrontation. They need someone who can help them to kind of get from point A to point B, but without breaking the connection. Some of them need forgiveness. Some of them need mirth. I'm a big believer in humor, tasteful and thoughtful humor as an expression of generosity and love. So people have all different kinds of needs, and I ask myself, you know, what can I do for these individuals in a way that affirms them, that lets them realize that I'm concerned about them and that their life doesn't rest on some kind of cosmic mistake, but that is really precious and worth cherishing. I like that word, cherishing, a lot.
Now, when I start a typical day, I might think about, what do I need for lunch? And what do I need to get through my day? And where are my bus tokens? So, you know, truth be told, a lot of times I start my day thinking about what I need. So is part of your message to get the focus away from yourself and to really think about who are the people around me and how can I impact them today?
Absolutely. I think that there's a great paradox in life. In the giving of self lies the discovery of a deeper and a happier, and I believe science shows even a healthier self. So, you know, when I get really caught up in busyness, and life is so busy, you know, it's easy to lose sight of what's most important. We're just in this hectic pace, and we've got so many things to do. We're doing, but we forget about being, about the core reality of human life, and that is the kind of love that people can feel from us. You know, this isn't just something intellectual. I've met people of great love in life, and that includes Jean Vanier, who founded L'Arche, and it includes Mathieu Miquard, the Buddhist monk in Nepal, the Dalai Lama. You know, when you're around them, you feel this kind of effervescence. It's a combination of things. It's warmth, it's compassion, it's joy, it's an inner freedom, a spontaneity, it's a hope and an optimism. There's just this cluster of qualities that I think are all part of what it is to live in love.
We're talking with Dr. Stephen Post. He has a new book out called The Hidden Gifts of Helping. I'm Mike and Scott in for Dan Gottlieb today on Voices in the Family. And Stephen, you wrote this book in part. One of the central themes in the book is your move. You lived in Cleveland for a long time and then had to move because of a job, a change in jobs. And that move really kind of unsettled your life. So talk a bit about what happened there.
You know, I spent 20 years living in a suburb of Cleveland called Shaker Heights. That's where my wife and I raised our two kids. We had so many friends who were the parents of Andrew or Emma, who were on the soccer teams or the lacrosse teams or whatever. You know, you become so familiar with an environment. That's my chair in the library. That's my path by the lake. And we need stability of place so that we can have stability of relationships, so that we can have the kinds of friendships and the kind of relationships that really make a difference in life. So then suddenly, like a lot of Americans are experiencing, you know, we had to move on out from Cleveland to Stony Brook, New York. And that was a great thing. On the one hand, we were so excited. But on the other hand, you know, it was, as we got into it, really quite challenging because we had to rebuild the world around us. And I'll tell you, we did it very purposefully by gift love. You know, my wife started tutoring kids across the street in the elementary school who had learning difficulties. My son, Drew, started volunteering in the hospital. And we all made an effort in a very purposeful way to just be generous and forget about ourselves. And over time, that made a huge difference in our move. Because moves, you know, they say the three biggest stressors in life are losing a loved one, losing a job, and losing a community, losing a place. So, you know, we had lost two or three, and that's a lot. And there are all sorts of issues related to mental health and physical health. When you lose what scientists call social capital, that kind of connective tissue in our lives, it has a big effect. It creates stress, and we struggle with it. So the quicker we can adjust, the better. And the way to do that is just to reach out and love others, to be really concerned about your neighbor.
And you felt this beneficial effect of giving, of volunteering in your own life, but there is also, there's a lot of research around it that it actually, when you volunteer, when you give of yourself, of your time, it does something good for your mental health. Let's start with that.
Well, absolutely. There's a lot of good research on minor depression, not major depression, but minor and moderate depression. One of the best things that you can do is to be proactive in engaging in helping activities. Some researchers refer to this as the helper's high. That's not a new concept, although we understand it better now. We understand that the brain is involved, the part of the brain that's deeply emotional. Don't write this down, anyone, but the mesolimbic pathway lights up when people are involved in generous giving behaviors. And that's the part of the brain that's associated with feelings of joy and even doles out feel-good chemicals like dopamine. So there's a whole neurology and now a biology of giving. There's a hormone called oxytocin that kicks up, and that's associated with three moods, if you will. It's of course called the compassion hormone, but it's also associated with tranquility or serenity, and it's also associated with social trust. So when we move from a preoccupation with the self and its problems, and we really, with our hearts, look out toward others, there's a change that occurs in us, and it's a wonderful thing that we're just beginning to understand.
Let's take a call. We have Sarah on the line at 1-888-477-9499. Hello, Sarah. You're on Voices in the Family.
Yes. Hi, Mark. Well, I'm glad you took my call. Well, I have a 20-year-old daughter. I have three kids, actually, two daughters and one son. I love them. They are my life. And one day, my 20-year-old told me, "Mom, how do you do it so we love you so much?" And I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "I'm afraid to, you know, have kids one day and they will not love me the way I love you." So I looked at her, I said, "You know what, they'll see it and they will give it back to you." And I said, "I love you more than you do, even though you think you love me a lot." That was my comment, yeah.
Oh, thank you, Sarah. And Stephen, I'm sure when we become parents, we have a lot of anxiety. I remember, you know, when I was pregnant with my son, I kept thinking, what if I have him and suddenly I don't love him? Or what if I'm not meant to be a mom? Or you have all these anxieties, and talking to other mothers and other parents, they say, I thought the same thing. So is that, again, we talked before we were chatting with Sarah for a second, you talked about some of the hormones inside of us and all those things. Do they really kick in when you become a parent?
Oh, they do. Oxytocin, this compassion hormone, kicks in especially heavily at birth for a mother. But also studies now show that oxytocin is present in men, except at lower levels, and it also kicks in for fatherhood. So that's a good thing. I think it's fair to say that parental love is pretty hardwired. But then, you know, as I sometimes think to myself, okay, until those kids start talking back,
right.
Which is to say that it has its challenges. And even parental love, which is such a wonderful thing, and I'm so glad to hear about people's experiences of parental love. It's a beautiful thing. But, you know, it also needs work. It's an art, and we need to be focused. And there are times with our kids, especially in adolescence, I have a 16-year-old, when, you know, there's a lot of things you need to overlook, and it's just love for no reason, and you live for another day. So I'm realistic about parental love. But I think it's the core of our lives.
And sometimes when we talk about love and tough situations and relationships with people, do you think sometimes we expect too much? We expect things to be perfect all the time, or there are times when love is very present and sometimes when it's maybe not so present, but it's still there?
Oh, yeah. You know, love is sporadic in a lot of ways. You know, it has its peaks and valleys. And when you get into a relationship, whether it's a friendship or in marriage, which is a special form of friendship, if you will, you know, you've just got to anticipate that. So there are times when, you know, you're just, your whole heart is moved and you're profoundly attracted and everything is just alive with color and life. But then there are times, not necessarily when there were 4 feet of snow in Cleveland in February, when you're kind of going through the motions. But that going through the motions is important. In other words, you want to recognize that love ebbs and flows. And if you don't realize that it's really hard to have a lasting union.
And that is Stephen Post. He is a professor in the Department of Preventive Medicine at Stony Brook University Medical Center, and his new book is called The Hidden Gifts of Helping. We'll talk more in a moment. Right now, I'm going to pass things over to Pledge Central, where Christine Dempsey and Chris Satullo are standing by to give you a different number where you can call in right now to support everything that we do here at WHYY. Christine and Chris?
Actually, it's Christine and Susan. Susan Palenko here, asking for you to support Voices in the Family. Thank you, Mike. And the number to do that is 1-888-345-9499, 1-888-345-WHYY or WHYY.org. Here's the situation about, I guess 2 weeks ago, we started our membership campaign, and we wanted to end it when we scheduled to end it. However, we did not reach the goal. So we're back trying to finish that up today. And as of 12:25 on this Monday afternoon, we need $26,000 to reach that goal. And once we do, it is over. So we'd like you to be a part of it right now and call to show your support for Voices in the Family. The number to do that is 1-888-345-9499, 1-888-345-WHYY or WHYY.org.
And we have a mini goal this break to hear and earn $3,000. So this hour, we'd like to earn $3,000 toward that goal. During this break, that could break down to be about 1,000. And we know that we have more than 1,000 people listening. So we're relying on you to come through for Voices in the Family and to support this kind of programming. Now, we have a number of ways of saying thank you. For a pledge of $100, you can get Dr. Dan Gottlieb's book, Learning from the Heart, Lessons on Living, Loving, and Listening. Very, very perfect topic to what we're discussing today, talking about all different kinds of love. And that's just one of the ways that we have to say thank you. But if you've given to WHYY in the past and you have supported Voices in the Family, why not consider giving an additional gift? Or if you would like to send a public radio Valentine to someone you know, someone in your life who's important to you, why not consider doing that now? Give us a call, 1-888-345-9499, or online at WHYY.org. It starts with you, and we're inviting you to do it now.
1-888-345-9499, WHYY.org. So far, we have $230 in towards that goal of $1,000, and we'd like to reach that in the next, 3 minutes or so. Completely doable, but I can't do it, and Susan can't do it, and Mike can't do it. You've got to do it. You've got to make the phone call. You've got to go online. You've got to say, yeah, I support WHYY and Voices in the Family, not only emotionally, but also financially. 1-888-345-9499. 1-888-345-WHYY, WHYY.org. That is how you get in touch with us. It's really funny because I asked Mike in before, what's the topic of the show? And she goes, it's about love. And I kind of rolled my eyes. And she goes, no, it's not about romantic love. And I was like, okay, I can get on board with that. But the word love is something people use a lot to talk about WHYY and NPR, and mm-hmm. especially Dr. Dan. You know, I love that program. I love that station. Well, you know, a lot of times you have to prove your love. And you can do that with one phone call and one contribution to WHYY. The number's 1-888-345-9499, 1-888-345-WHYY, or WHYY.org.
And it is the time to show your love for WHYY. You can prove it. It's no longer the time to talk about it, but to actually take action and make it happen. Only you can do that, but it's time to step forward and support the programming you believe in. Since you're tuned into Voices in the Family right now, why not take a moment, give us a call, 1-888-345-9499, or go online to WHYY.org. We know that we have lots of listeners and lots of lovers of Voices in the Family and people who always profess their love for Dr. Dan. What we're inviting you to do is now come forward, make an additional gift, or give a public radio Valentine to someone important in your life. Make it happen. Do it now. 1-888-345-9499 or online at WHYY.org.
We have about 30 seconds left in this break, and we can reach the goal that has been set just for this short break. We want to make $1,000. That helps us stay on track. That helps us get closer to the overall goal. We can't get there without you. It's just as simple as that. We can't get there without you. That's why we're asking you to call right now. 1-888-345-9499, 1-888-345-WHYY, or you can go online to WHYY.org. Make a difference. Become a WHYY supporter right now. Thanks.
WHYY is supported by the Cooper Cancer Institute, offering a multidisciplinary team approach to the diagnosis and treatment of lung, colorectal, breast, and other cancers. At Cooper Cancer Institute, nurse navigators personally assist each newly diagnosed patient, helping coordinate care and serving as educators and advocates. More at cooperhealth.org/cancer or 800-8-COOPER. That's 800-8-COOPER.
And welcome back to Voices in the Family. I'm Mike and Scott, in for the lovable Dan Gottlieb today. What we're listening to right now is a Dave Brubeck piece that he wrote for his wife on their 42nd anniversary. It's a beautiful piece and a tribute to long-lasting altruistic companion love. And we're talking about love today. My guest here in the studio is Dr. Stephen Post. He has a new book out called The Hidden Gifts of Helping. And that is really one of the broader themes that we've been hitting on, the connection between giving of yourself and being a loving person. And Stephen, let's jump right back to the phones at 1-888-477-9499. We have Mickey on the phone looking to join us. And there she is. Hello, Mickey.
Hello.
Hi, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yeah, there's a little feedback. What's your comment?
Well, one of the things that people really should try to recognize is that love is
is the ultimate human experience. Really, what is it that we want? We just want to be loved. So if we understand that we want to be loved, and then you're with somebody, if they're acting or they're perturbed about something, if what you say to yourself is, this person really just wants to be loved, just like you, it kind of can switch up a little bit, I think, the perspective. Because I think one of the things that happens for us is that we're so afraid to not get the love that we need, that we put that in front. And the other thing is that I think this work takes practice. I don't, even though it seems like it should be natural for us to be able to do it, I found for myself over the years that I really practice loving. I practice thinking about what is it that this other person is experiencing. I ask myself, what is it that I could do? And sometimes I really try to feel part of all of it, just part of the world, part of the compassionate, loving world. And that's just helped for me.
Thank you so much, Mickey. That was a very pertinent comment. And Stephen, Mickey mentioned the word practice. You have to practice love. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, Mickey's right on target. In the end, love is a practice. It's an activity. It's not just an emotional state. Of course, you know, it is an emotional state. It is a warmth of heart. It's not dry, arid altruism where you maybe out of duty or grudgingly help another person. But it really does come from the heart. So she used the word compassion. Compassionate love is really important, and it gets to that underlying sense of connective tissue, of oneness. I repeat that old joke, what did the Zen Buddhist say to the hot dog vendor? Make me one with everything. at some level, you know, that kind of oneness really matters. And so she's quite right. You know, it's a practice, it's an activity, and it's not just some kind of self-satisfying emotional state. Although, I must say that, you know, when you compare that emotional state to hostility and anger and bitterness, it's very good for you, it makes you happy, and it's much healthier.
And another thing she mentioned was the kind of defensiveness that we feel sometimes when one is worried about, am I going to get the kind of love I need and I deserve? And that puts up the defenses where people are scared to be hurt. So how do you make that first step of opening oneself up to be able to give freely?
Well, I say love and forget about it. Don't let some vision of reciprocity, some kind of law of tit for tat, hang over your neck like a sword of Damocles. Be free. Love and hope that you're like, I call this the dandelion effect. I know that's a pretty strange concept, but when you blow on a dandelion, you know, all the little bits of dust go every place, and you can't predict where they're going. You have no idea where they might land. But the thing is that they might inspire somebody, and you might not know about it, to be more loving. So it's all about modeling. It's all about ourselves providing the kind of examples in the world so that other people can give more freely. So love and forget about it. There's one new book out called Love for No Reason. Just love for no reason, and you're going to be better off.
In your book, you describe an encounter with a gentleman on the train. And at the time, you were feeling, let's say, somewhat disgruntled about your move, maybe. Mm-hmm. You were not in a great mood. And you met this gentleman who was really in a bad situation, but ended up inspiring you. So talk about that.
So, Mike, and I have learned about the Long Island Railroad.
Yeah.
And this was around Christmas time in 2008. We'd been in New York about 6 months. And I was coming into Stony Brook from Manhattan. I'd had a business meeting. And, you know, I was just feeling, you know, oh, gosh, you know, I'm so far apart from my neighborhood back in Ohio. And I sat down with this guy named Jack. And what a story he told me. You know, he'd lost his job. He'd spent through his 401k. His wife had left him. He had a diagnosis of cancer. He was jobless, and yet he was going to Port Jefferson, which is a little coast town out about 60 miles on the north shore of Long Island from New York City. And he was just going to work serving soup, Christmas soup, for hungry people. And he said, you know, he was so exuberant about this, and it made him forget about all the things that were concerning for him. And he said, you know, if I wasn't doing that, I'm not sure I could survive. And that, I think, is something that's really key. You know, my wife, Mitsuko, said, if it wasn't for those kids I'm helping and tutoring at that school across the street, I don't know if I could have made it through this move. So for him, it was a really powerful experience.
Let's take another call at 1-888-477-9499. We have Itka on the phone. Did I say your name right? That's Itka.
Yes.
Okay. What's your comment?
On the phone. Did I say?
Are you there?
Yes, I am.
What's your comment?
I have lost, when I was 16 years old, I lost my entire family and my community.
Itka, could you turn your radio down? We're hearing a bit of feedback, so we're having trouble hearing you. If you just turn your radio off, we'll be able to hear you.
But I learned one thing, that if I will hate the people who did that to me, then I will give them the final victory, and I won't do that. So I wrote a poem, "My body belongs to me. To God belongs my soul. To my children belongs my inheritance. My love belongs to all, and that is healing me." Thank you for taking my call, and God bless you all.
Oh, thank you, Itka, and you make a very powerful point. Stephen, you talk a lot about the role of forgiveness in your book.
You know, that was a beautiful statement. What was your name again? I'm sorry.
It was Itka.
Itka. Thank you, Itka. That was beautiful. You know, you're victorious. You're totally victorious. So oftentimes we get caught up in this kind of negative spiral of bitterness and hostility and vengefulness. But, you know, in the end, we're just digging our own graves, because finally, those kinds of emotional states are terribly self-destructive. To the degree that we're in, it may take time that we can overcome those and get the victory in love. It's great for the world around us, but it's the healthiest thing we can do. It restores us to health. It restores us to happiness. And in general, it helps us live a more meaningful life.
And again, we're talking with Stephen Post. He has a new book out called The Hidden Gifts of Helping. And right now, I would also like to welcome Dr. Renee Bradley to the show. She is the research director for the Relationship Research Institute in Seattle. Renee?
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And you and Stephen also know each other, I guess we should say, as a way of disclaimer, right?
I'm familiar with the work he's done.
and I'm familiar with Renee as well. So.
Great. And Renee, talk a bit about the kind of things you research at the Relationship Research Institute.
Well, we basically are dedicated to strengthening all types of relationships through the research that we do. And so we have a lot of focus on family relationships, so couples' intimate romantic relationships, as well as the relationships between parents and their children. And so we've done a lot of work over the last, gosh, now 30 to 40 years almost, under the direction of Dr. John Gottman, all dedicated to learning about basically what makes relationships work and the types of behaviors and effective communication patterns that we see that basically don't really contribute to having a healthy, long-lasting relationship. So we've learned a lot from the research participants that we've seen throughout these days.
And what are some of the big stressors on relationships?
Oh, gosh, there's quite a few. I mean, generally, over the course of a couple's relationship, they can go through certain developmental periods that can be more stressful than others. Certainly, you know, usually when you start off a relationship, you're choosing to go into that relationship because of, you know, it's a good thing. You think it's a positive thing. You think this is the person that you want to spend the rest of your days with. But certainly you can then start to do things like build a family. Oftentimes that's something that happens early on in a relationship, and doing so, despite the fact that most people think that having a baby is going to be this wonderful experience and, you know, just something, you know, that they have not experienced before and will be bring such joy to their lives, unfortunately, we see that approximately two-thirds of couples that go through that transition to parenthood actually have this significant decline in their level of relationship satisfaction. And so that's sometimes a surprise to couples. And so we've learned that that's a time that they definitely need support.
And Stephen, have you found in your work that sometimes we don't expect those changes that occur in relationships and then we're not ready for them?
Oh, no question. I couldn't agree more with Renee. You know, having that child on the one hand is the most glorious thing, and it's very much a part of our reproductive nature. But, you know, realistically, you know, it's the diapers, it's those sleepless nights, you know, it's the terrible twos. I've got to tell you, I have an older sister, and she's wonderful. She's an oboist, and she's given me several compliments in my life. One thing she said, this was a couple of weeks after my wife and I had our first child. We were visiting home, and my sister said, you know, Stevie, I never really liked you until you became a father. And I took that as very positive, you know, because I haven't gotten too many compliments over the years. But, you know, there's a growth. It's work. And I think, you know, what Renee's saying is that it takes effort, and you have to be willing to work your way through some tough times, because parenting is not a simple matter.
And Renee, what are you finding? What helps people make it through those tough times?
It definitely takes a bit of a leap of faith, for sure. You know, just knowing that this is something that you as a couple and as a family can get through, and also sort of keeping in mind that it's really, of course, beneficial for your child, your whole family, if you can still, you know, keep a strong, healthy relationship with your partner through that transition despite the stress. So definitely there are lots of things that couples can do to try to strengthen their relationships through those transitional and stressful times. And one thing that I always like to try to keep in mind is, this is actually a motto of one of our programs called the Bringing Baby Home Program. It's a program designed to help support couples through that transition. And it's small things often. And so the idea there is that, you know, you don't have to do something as grandiose as, you know, bring home a diamond necklace for your wife, or, you know, buy a trip to Hawaii. But it's just the little day-to-day things that you can do to honor your partner, show them that you respect them, and just remind them that you really do love them and care for them, just building that sort of fondness and admiration. Those little things definitely go quite a long ways. And actually, if you sort of get into the habit of doing those things, what we talk about is, in essence, you're really building your emotional bank account. And so by just sort of turning towards your partner in the day-to-day moments, even just remembering to say thank you, you know, thanks for picking the kids up after school today. Thanks for making dinner. I really appreciated that. You know, those little things help to build that emotional bank account. And then during times of stress, during times of conflict that, of course, couples are inevitably going to face, you know, as long as you have a decent sort of, you know, a decent emotional bank account, you sort of draw upon that, and that can help to get you through those challenging times.
Let's take another quick call at 1-888-477-9499. We have Stephen on the phone. Thanks for joining us, Stephen.
Hello. There are 1,000 definitions of love. That's the paradox, and all of them have elements of truth. I'd like to add one that you might want to think about. Love is giving someone the power to hurt you.
All right, Stephen, that's a great definition of love. And Stephen Post, our guest now, we do worry about being hurt, whether it is in our love for partner, for child, for friend. We do worry about being hurt.
Well, we do, and rightly so. But that comes with the territory of love, and we need to get used to it, and it shouldn't deter us. And I wanted to say with regard to Renee, I couldn't agree more. It's not big things, big actions that we're talking about, but small things done with great love. And so there was a famous architect who said, God is in the details. Well, I would say love is in the details. It's in those little bits and pieces, those nooks and crannies of everyday life that love really does build over time, and it becomes habitual. And I love Renee's idea of kind of creating an emotional bank account and using gratitude and so forth. But Stephen, your definition, absolutely, there's a vulnerability in love, and yet, you know, if we didn't have love, I don't think we could live.
And we have to take another short break. The voice you just heard is Dr. Stephen Post. He has a new book out called The Hidden Gifts of Helping, and we're also joined by Renee Bradley of the Relationship Research Institute in Seattle. You're listening to Voices in the Family. I'm Mike and Scott in for Dan Gottlieb, and right now we're going to turn things over to Pledge Central with an also very, very important message.
It's a message about love as well, Mikan. My name is Christine Dempsey, here with Susan Palenko. We love public radio, and we are members of WHYY, and we'd like you to join us by calling 1-888-345-9499, 1-888-345-WHYY, or WHYY.org. I'm calling this, I know that we've been calling this kind of, you know, show your love for WHYY. I'm calling it prove your love. For WHYY. Mm-hmm. Prove it. If you love WHYY, support it financially. 1-888-345-9499-WHYY.org.
You can put your money where your heart is and show your gratitude to WHYY. It's that simple, and really, in this conversation that we're listening to, talking about love and gratitude, it really is the small things. And the small thing that you can do right now is show your support for WHYY. 1-888-345-9499. Or go to WHYY.org. You can show your love right now. And toward our goal, we currently need $24,000 to end, hopefully. And you can have a part in that. And during this break, we would like to hear, or we'd like to get $1,000 in. Our last break, we were able to get $2,000 in. We know we could do double that because we know we have lots of lovers of Voices in the Family out there. Now we're asking you to show it and to bring it forward. 1-888-345-9499. Get that public radio Valentine sent to your sweetheart right now.
1-888-345-9499, 1-888-345-WHYY, WHYY.org. Every call gets us closer to the goal. Every web ping helps us reach that goal earlier, sooner rather than later. So it's one of those things like, well, what are you waiting for? Because you can do it, and you can do it right now. You have 2 minutes. You have the love for WHYY or for Voices in the Family, and you have the means to make the phone call at 1-888-345-9499, 1-888-345-WHYY, WHYY.org. Voices in the Family is such a unique program. This show would not or could not exist on commercial radio, but it exists here on WHYY because of listeners who support it, and that means you. You may have done it in the past and haven't been there in a while, so please make the phone call right now. Make a huge difference. 1-888-345-9499, 1-888-345-WHYY online like that person just did. Maybe they're on the lunch break and they went to WHYY.org. Thanks for your support.
Supporting WHYY, Chester County Hospital. Blood pressure and exercise are just a few of the factors that affect heart health. Chester County Hospital is offering an online cardiac risk assessment to help you understand hidden risks. Online at chestercountyhospital.org.
The Barnes Foundation proudly supports WHYY and welcomes you to view its art collection, open to the public extra days during its final months in Marion. The Barnes's intimate galleries offer a unique perspective on art, featuring wall-to-wall paintings by Renoir, Cezanne, Matisse, Van Gogh, Seurat, and many others, carefully juxtaposed with art and crafts from around the world. More details at barnesfoundation.org or at 610-667-0290.
Money, And welcome back to Voices in the Family. I'm Mike and Scott, in for Dan Gottlieb today. That, of course, is music by Queen, Funny How Love Is, and it's about the universality of love, which is something we're talking about on Voices in the Family. My guest here in the studio is Dr. Stephen Post, the author of, among other things, The Hidden Gifts of Helping, and we're also joined by Dr. Renee Bradley from the Relationship Research Institute in Seattle. And you were both just talking about how having children impacts a relationship, and speaking of children, many parents want to raise a loving and giving child. And if you're around toddlers, you know that the big word is mine, 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 mine. And then the parents say, no, no, we share. And the kid says, no, mine. So how do you encourage children to love, to share, to be that person that we all would like to be?
I've got a great tip I'd love to share with folks. I'm not sure if you've heard of this concept, but it's definitely something we've done a lot of research on here. It's called emotion coaching. And so emotion coaching is a style of parenting. It's a little bit different than discipline. So you're not trying to, discipline your child and say you've done something wrong. But generally, emotion coaching is when your child is eliciting some sort of emotion, whether it be happiness or anger or sadness, anything really at all. And emotion coaching parents take those opportunities as times to emotionally connect with their children and to teach them about how to, manage those different feelings that they might experience in their lives. And by trying to establish that emotional connection, you really can build a more compassionate family and children, because they really learn that, everybody feels differently, everybody feels different emotions, and that's okay. It's just what matters is how you express them, and you can really teach your kids to do that in a respectful way, learn how to manage those feelings so that they can, feel a stronger bond with you as a parent.
But Stephen, on a lot of levels, research is finding that we are hardwired for love and giving even when we're very little.
Oh, yes. Some of the most exciting studies in love research, if you will, are focused now on toddlers, 18-month-old children. This comes out of the Yale Child Studies Center and then out of Harvard University. So one remarkable study, which appeared in the science journal Science, it goes roughly as follows. You take an 18-month-old toddler, and you show the toddler a puppet show. And there are three puppets with very, very different puppets. One big, one small. They're different colors. One has big, wide, round eyes. The other has little square eyes. And the first puppet is climbing up an incline. And it gets almost to the top, and then it slips down, right? And then the second puppet is a kind of Good Samaritan puppet. So the first puppet is just about to get up the top, almost falling down, and the second puppet comes along and pushes it up over the top. And then the third puppet, who's a kind of a mean Jack, right, comes along and pushes the first puppet back down the slope. And so then they take these 18-month-old toddlers and they lay out the three puppets in front of them. And about 80% of the toddlers actually make eye contact with, stare at, or reach out and touch the helpful puppet. And there are all kinds of things that are being done like this. There's a book out called Rousseau's Children that talks about this in great depth. And so the question is, how do we build on that? And I think what Renee is saying is, all the Holocaust rescuers and, the studies we have from Sam Oliner and others say that they saw empathy and compassion modeled in their families. They had good non-parent mentors. They were oftentimes part of communities that emphasized the values of caring. So how we raise a loving child, I couldn't agree. It's the most important question we have. It's easy to conceive a child. It takes a few seconds. But to raise a child of love, that's a big challenge, but that ought to be the thing that matters the most in our lives as parents.
And talk about with your son, Drew, who was a teenager as you made this difficult move. What role did it play for him to volunteer, to be out there, to give to others, as he was experiencing a difficult time himself?
Well, he was 13 and he was angry when we moved, because all his friends back in Ohio were starting the eighth grade and here he was all alone. Although I must say he adjusted pretty quickly, but it helped him a lot. He started volunteering at the hospital, and he found a lot of meaning in that. And now, believe it or not, he wants to be a doctor. He wants to be a surgeon. So through getting away from his own issues and helping others, he kind of discovered a deeper self, which is really a wonderful thing. But I must also say that the first day he went to the eighth grade, he left the house, he was all full of tears. He came back that afternoon, and he was so joyful. He was beaming. And he said, "Dad, I sat down with about 10 new friends. I'm not Andrew anymore. I'm Cleveland Drew." And he said, "A lot of these kids who sat with me were beautiful girls."
All right. That helps, I'm sure. Speaking of love. And Renee, do we know anything in terms of family is kind of making it a point to focus less on their own problems, but rather focus their efforts outwards to be engaged in their communities, to connect with others, and how they do with that?
Oh, I definitely think that it takes a village to raise a child, I guess, is that real sort of common saying, and I think that that's definitely true. So if parents can, you know, start to engage in others in their neighborhoods, in their communities, they basically gain support and then can model towards their kids, you know, that it is really important to get involved with your community and be able to give something back. And I think that that's also an opportunity that families can take to, you know, have that be something as a family ritual, so you can start to build that into your family culture. So you're sort of imparting that value not only to your partner but to your children as well, and then they're more likely to sort of keep that within them when they go off to start families of their own.
You know, the Harvard sociologist Robert Putnam has a wonderful new book out that's number one on a lot of bestseller lists. It's called American Grace, and he talks about how important it is to many families to connect with some kind of faith community, whether the synagogue or the church or whatever it might be, the temple, that's a way where you can create a lot of social connection real quickly, and it can be very helpful to families in terms of dealing with stress and being committed to love.
And with that, unfortunately, Stephen, we have to close. And I want to thank you so much for being here today. Stephen Post is the author of The Hidden Gifts of Helping. And we also heard from Dr. Renee Bradley. She's the research director for the Relationship Research Institute in Seattle. And the music you're hearing is from an African group, Ladysmith Black Mambazo. And I'm Mike and Scott. I was in for Dan Gottlieb today, and we thank you for joining us. And right now, let's go back over to the Loving Pledge Central.
And you're listening to Voices in the Family. I'm Susan Palinko here with Christine Dempsey, and we are here to feel the love from you. It's time to show your love for WHYY and show your love for Voices in the Family. Since you're tuned in, since you're listening now, why not take a moment, become a member, 1-888-345-9499. During this break, we have a goal to hit $1,000, and it can all start with you. Go to WHYY.org and make a pledge.
1-888-345-9499, 1-888-345-WHYY, WHYY.org. Only a few minutes here for you to show your support to WHYY and to Voices in the Family and help us end this membership campaign sooner rather than later. We do have, we had an overall goal when this started a few weeks ago, and that goal